Grass-fed, locally raised, 100% organic. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday Eve edition. We're now welcomed live via phone by one of our favorites. He is John Nichols from The Nation. He's a friend of ours. John, welcome back to the big show.
Hey, I'm glad to be with you, brother.
Well, I'm glad you joined me, John. I have many questions for you, and I want to start with... The big Summit for Democracy event, this two-day virtual event being hosted by President Joe Biden. John, I have to ask you, in nearly, you know, all sincerity, are we the right nation to host a Summit for Democracy at this time in history?
Might have been a little more effective if, say, we had passed the For the People Act, the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, and some of these other protections against voter suppression and actually overturning elections. That would have given us a little heft. Without doing that, we, I suppose, are a very good nation to host a summit on democracy because we might be able to pick up some good tips from other countries on how to do it.
Good point, John Nichols. The... You know, you kind of caught me sidewise with that one. John, the January 6th, the insurrection, nearly a year ago it happened. And we are finding out more and more public details. And the January 6th committee is issuing subpoenas. And apparently they're doing lots of, you know, private depositions currently, including Ali Alexander, I believe, testifying today on the Hill, the Stop the Steal guy. But I want to ask you, John, about Mark Meadows, the former chief of staff to President Donald Trump. Meadows, have you seen the PowerPoint presentation, John? Have you reviewed any of it? And how troubling would it be to think that the plan was to use National Guard troops to basically go in and overturn the election in every state, utilize the U.S. Marshals, the Department of Homeland Security, and keep counting those ballots till Trump wins was basically the plan. Have you seen any of it, John?
Yeah, well, I mean, this isn't really a big secret. In fact, I guess my regard for the 9/11 committee is a little bit weakened by the slowness with which they're approaching this thing. I'm hoping they could get something done before the actual anniversary. But look, it's quite clear now from the memos that have been revealed, from statements from people that were involved, and from, frankly, the ongoing messaging from Donald Trump himself, that there was a clear intent to overturn the results of a free and fair election, to prevent the candidate that the people of the United States chose by more than 7 million votes from becoming president. And, you know, we can dance around that fact, but the reality is that Donald Trump and his allies, including and associates, people like Mark Meadows, engaged in an attempted coup. They failed, and that's very, very good. But I can again tell you that the participants in the Democracy Summit would remind you that those who engage in a failed coup are just as bad as those who engage in a successful coup. In fact, maybe even in some ways a little more frightening, because those who engage in a failed coup and are not held to account usually come back and try to do so again.
John, the party of where are Hillary Clinton's emails are now just fine with shielding, using claims of executive privilege or whatever other sort of scurrilous claims being made by Trump's defense and Mark Meadows' defense, et cetera, et cetera. John, what do you think about this? Will we see compelled testimony, or will the only testimony we see compelled be in criminal prosecutions?
Well, look, I would like to see the Congress actually, you know, flex some muscles and do what it has a right and a power to do, which is to, you know, demand that people who have been subpoenaed, people who have been called to testify, do so. The Congress finds itself in a weird position. They don't really have the capacity, or a particularly sufficient capacity, to make people do things. They can investigate, they can, you know, raise the issues, and I would argue that with the backing of a court, they could, in fact, compel testimony. But, you know, the likelihood is that what's going to happen with this committee is a sort of a push and a pull, like something that you saw, have seen in the past with the Watergate committee, with the committee that investigated Iran-Contra, where you have some people are willing to testify, some who are not, some, you know, an unsatisfactory circumstance that leads to some kind of report, and ideally some sorts of criminal, you know, prosecutions that come out of that report. But, you know, this is my problem. While I'm respectful of what the commission is doing, they're taking an awful long time to do it. They're like, you know, being very secretive when I think they should be very much in public. I'd like to see them be much more aggressive. And frankly, I think the core thing that you're heading toward with this commission is, or committee, is not so much a moment where Donald Trump or Mark Meadows or other people come in and testify. I would love to see that, but I think what you're really aiming to do is to get some of the lower level people to, you know, explain what was really going on, and more likely than not, get to some details as regards particular members of Congress who were participants in the coup attempt. And that's important because those members of Congress should be removed from Congress.
Yeah, you'd like to see it happen that way, John. I'm less convinced it will. Most communications are...
Well, I'm not at all convinced at this point, I'm afraid.
Well, most communications are two-party. And John, here's the encouraging part. Whether Mark Meadows released one side of a conversation or whether it was one of the many other known or unknown people that have been subpoenaed by the January 6th committee, there are lots of communications that are being ferreted out from one side of the conversation or the other. But John, ultimately, mm-hmm. we've got one party, the Republican Party, that's, you know, anti-democratic. My question is the other party feckless? Can they do anything to stop it?
Feckless is such a cruel word. I'd like to think maybe they're just incompetent. But
my bad, John.
Look, the fact of the matter is that the Democratic Party lacks a sense of urgency on this issue. And it's bizarre because the people, there's a great many people that are far more urgent than I think members of Congress are. Here's the bottom line. In a very short amount of time, the Democratic-controlled U.S. Senate is expected to go on recess, right? And they're going to take off, about a month for Christmas and New Year's and Hanukkah and whatever other celebrations they may want to bring into the mix. And that's great, but, they haven't done anything of consequence to address the crisis that is going on. The Senate failed to convict Donald Trump of the high crimes and misdemeanors that he was charged and he was clearly guilty of. Since then, they have failed to pass legislation that would deal with at least the most concerning evidences of voter suppression, extreme gerrymandering, scheming to overturn elections. And, you know, frankly, I don't think they've earned their holiday break. I think they should stay on the job until they pass these things. And I know that that means, you know, having to get, you know, Joe Manchin to actually do something decent and Kyrsten Sinema and a few others. But, you know, I find it jarring, shocking, that these people are all planning to take their big, long break while around the country, state legislators, the Republican state legislators, and, you know, lunatics like Michael Gableman are continuing to pursue efforts to either, if not overturn elections, to prepare to overturn the next one.
Folks, you are listening to the Devils Advocates Radio Show. Got to find Code Devil for a while longer. He is John Nichols from The Nation. John, I want to ask you about the media's coverage of the Biden presidency, perhaps in contrast to the Trump presidency. And yeah. Trump, obviously, he'd get on Twitter every morning, sit on the gold-plated toilet, and he'd create a fresh outrage. And he'd move the entire, you know, news cycle damn near each and every day for good or bad reasons, mostly bad. Now, Joe Biden, a little more boring by comparison, doesn't, you know, tweet in the same sort of way, doesn't create the same sort of infighting, or, you know, he's not the ratings machine that perhaps Donald Trump is. But there have been a few issues. I mean, right now, I look at the economy. The economy is cooking right now. The S&P had the best year in its history, up 37%, while Joe Biden's been the president. I don't hear any coverage of that. Hell, I don't hear coverage of that barely on the financial news. John, does the media give Joe Biden a fair shake?
No, but I wouldn't expect them to give him a fair break. Look, by and large, media is tough on presidents. Some they give a better break than others. But I think that there's clearly some evidence of an unfairness there. But that's not something you blame the media for. You got to blame the people involved. And the fact of the matter is that the Biden administration has not done a good job of blowing its own horn. It's also not done a good job of advocating for its own programs. It's not, you know, this is an administration that reflects the president. The president is a veteran of the United States Senate, 36 years in that chamber, 8 years as vice president, effectively the president of the Senate. So, you know, the vast majority of his adult life has been spent, you know, as an insider, as somebody working on Capitol Hill inside the Beltway and thinking that that's the way to do stuff. He's the president of the United States now. He has to start taking it outside of the Capitol, outside of the Beltway, to the American people and make his own case. And he might also want to get his vice president, Kamala Harris, you know, out of whatever, you know, corner they've moved her to, into a out in the forefront position where she can speak on behalf of the administration much more loudly, much more aggressively, and to get their cabinet members, you know, out of the witness protection programs they all seem to be in, so that they can go out and make the case as well. This is an administration that has failed to amplify the messages that it needs to amplify about what it's accomplishing. When they do so, they may still get treated unfairly by some of the media, but it will be far less of a problem because we live in an era where it's much easier for political figures to communicate directly with the American people. So, yeah, you can criticize the media, and I often do. But on this one, I think there's really a responsibility on the part of the president and the people around him.
John, President Biden's polling kind of blows. It's terrible. And it's as bad as Donald Trump's polling was. And obviously, these are two quite different presidents with quite different governance goals. Here's my question. The Democrats overwhelmingly support Joe Biden, like 91% support. Mm-hmm. Just like the Republicans in Donald Trump's presidency, they overwhelmingly supported Donald Trump. And it was obviously the middle that Trump lost. It was the independents. Well, Joe Biden's also losing these very same independents. How does he win them back? Can they be won back? And if they're not, what does that foretell for next year's midterms, John?
Let's start at the end of that and then work our way back. If they're not, and if there isn't also sufficient mobilization of infrequent voters, which obviously are a big factor in midterms because that's where their infrequency is usually at its peak. If there isn't that, then the Democrats are going to lose the midterms really, really badly. They aren't just going to have, you know, a narrow setback in the Senate or the House. They could end up with a really serious setback, something that puts them in a dire circumstance in Washington, effectively making Biden a lame duck. And you could see really bad results in states, including a state like Wisconsin. So, that's the big concern. And the way to shift that, obviously, is you've got to make a tangible difference in people's lives. They're already talking. They've nickeled and dimed the Build Back Better plan down to, you know, half of what was proposed in the summer to, you know, a third of what was proposed at the start of the presidency by at least progressives. They're not delivering at a level that's making a real impact where people feel it.
John, hold that thought. Come back with us. More Devil's Advocates. My fine guest, John Nichols from The Nation.
My allegiance is to the Republic, to democracy!
If you're not with me, then you're my enemy.
Very powerful.